go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Certainly do hope you enjoyed Dr. Bill's American History Chat with the Prism West Virginia series last night. I know I did. Agnes went with me, as did Ferg, Horn Intern Junior Grade. It's a bit of an undertaking to get one of those things going. And Agnes just loves being there and hearing it all. As do I. Another magnificent chat session, no two ways about it. And there will be another on the 25th of October, again at 7 p.m., live from the Irma Bird Center in Beckley, West Virginia. Actually, it's closer to Beaver, West Virginia, but we'll call it Beckley. So, as a result of that, I missed another Republican pageant. Did I miss anything? Oh, actually, I've followed up on some of that silliness. We'll probably wind up talking about some of it this evening. There's a lot to discuss this evening. Program reminder, I will be gone tomorrow, the 13th, and Friday, the 14th. But we'll be back to air on Monday, the 17th. I'm flying out tomorrow at an insanely early hour, headed to Georgia. To a meeting on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch, who is a very kind co-sponsor of all of this program, all of this programming. And there should be some good conversations to be had there. There certainly were the last time, one of these meetings I was at. That was last March when I wound up down in Mississippi. There will be a cultural component to it, and I'll tell you all about it when I get back. So, in the meantime, if you would just sort of keep an, you know, mind the store and right, yeah. Well, it is the 12th day of October. It's a Wednesday, but of course, here at the Horn, you know that Wednesday means so much more than merely the middle of the week, hump day, downhill to Friday. That's right, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Minister of Music, if, as we pass the plate, you would lead us in our offertory hymn, it would be greatly appreciated. As the plate passes around, brethren and sistren, remember there's a little PayPal button in the bottom of the plate. All you need to do is press it and help keep all of this going. Keep it all on the air. Brother Minister of Music, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solitaire baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ting tang, walla walla bing bang, ooh ee, ooh ah ah. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, into Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I am Archpope Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Super Spiritualist, Animated Animist, Bob Kincaid. Now get them deacons on in out of the parking lot where they're standing there smoking with the sinners, and come on in through the vestibule, ignoring that 25-year-old bowl of butter mints is sitting there next to the plastic roses, and come on down that blood-red carpet, and brethren and sister, fall upon your knees, fall upon your knees right there at the altar in front of the subwoofer and lay your hands upon it and feel the rays and the healing power flowing through you from the server on high. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sisters, and it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn as I prepare to go forth this Thursday and Friday. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And this Prayer Meeting Wednesday is a special one. It's not very often we get to feature the Amish. This one's kind of hard to not, but, well, look, it's all religion, okay? It's all lunacy. You know, Reverend, what's-his-ass, says that Mitt Romney's a member of a cult when the Southern Baptist Church itself is a cult that was split off from Roman Catholicism, which split off from Orthodoxy, which started from the... Oh, look, if you go far enough back, you'll find there was a Jesus cult. As a matter of fact, that's who wrote the original books of the New Testament, the members of the Jesus cult. They called themselves the followers of the Way. But no, there's some religious lunacy out of Ohio. I caught this over at BartCop. It's via the Associated Press. I've never seen Amish in prison jumpsuits before. I hope I never see one, but I can tell you here and now I'd rather see than be one. Never mind. This is from Burgholz, Ohio. The leader of a breakaway Amish group said an attack on fellow Amish in which a man's beard was cut off was a religious issue stemming from long-standing resentment of his group's treatment. Now remember, this is a story about hair, bodily hair. Therefore, because God is a God of irony, the defendant is Sam Mullet. No, really. Sam Mullet, aged 66, said he wanted to send a message to the Amish in Holmes County, Ohio, that they should be ashamed of themselves for the way they were treating Mullet and his community. You know, you think of the Amish, you think of, oh, I don't know, Harrison Ford in Witness, you be careful among those English. Or maybe you think of Kingpin, you know, goodbye, Brother Munson, goodbye, whore, which she is. Or maybe you think of Shoe Fly Pie and people in buggies and... Right. You don't think of terrorist hair reprisals. But there it is, plain as day. From Tuesday, October the 11th, the Associated Press. Brother Mullet. Can't make that up.
Brother Mullet says, we'd like to get up in the morning, be left alone, live like normal people. They won't leave us be. Said he didn't order that other Amish men's beards be hacked off, but he didn't stop two of his sons and another man. From going in and cutting off the sacred beard of another Amish person. The two sons, the junior mullets, I guess, went into the home of a 74-year-old man in rural eastern Ohio, and they cut off a 74-year-old man's beard. Naturally, there were no electric clippers involved. I hate myself sometimes. Mullet is upset that his group of about 120 people who have a number of small farms have been called a cult. See, there's always linkage. You gotta have a little faith. Well, not faith, but you just gotta know there's gonna be a connector. I don't know if Reverend Jeffress has called it a cult or not, but somebody did. Mullet said he's upset that his group, about 120 people living on several small farms, has been called a cult by detractors. He said he moved the members of his group about 100 miles from Richland County to the hilly area in 1995 just to be left alone. We're not a cult. We're just trying to live a peaceful life. I was hoping I could move here, try to start a group of church people, do things in school and church the way we wanted. And he added that his God thinks he should be able to punish people in his church the way the police punish people in civil society. You have your laws on the road in the town. If somebody doesn't obey them, you punish them. But I'm not allowed to punish the church people? I just let them run over me? If every family would just do as they please, what kind of church would we have? This story is just... When Amish attack. Lester and Johnny Mullet and 53-year-old Levi Miller have been charged with burglary and kidnapping. Two more arrests are also expected. I just love this story. I read it early today, and I just knew it had prayer meeting Wednesday written all over it. There's no such thing as rational in religion. This is my favorite sentence from the whole story. He said the men hired a driver to carry them to Holmes County and to Carroll County, where a similar attack was carried out. You know, beard cutting. Five people were assaulted in Holmes County, including women who had their hair cut off. The men entered the home and said, Sam Mullet sent us here, and we're here on religious business. Oh, wait a minute. We have a heresy. Sheriff Fred Abdallah, well, now, said that the Mullets used scissors and battery-powered clippers in the attack. Battery-powered clippers. What is the world coming to when the Amish are using battery-powered clippers? Makes it sound like it might just be a cult after all. Because they should have been sawing away with knives. I don't even know if scissors would have been. No, but I love the part where, okay, they were using battery-powered clippers, but they hired a driver. I'm assuming we're not talking about a buggy here. They couldn't drive their own. So they had to hire the driving part done. Amish on the warpath. Chopping off beards. But, you know, maybe that's kind of a recommendation of the Amish. They chop off beards, not heads. But they're Christians. Just remember, they're Christians. Just saying. Now, a slightly more serious story, a couple of stories, actually. Coming out of Alabama. And fitting, I thought, for prayer meeting Wednesday. You know, of course, that the hellaciously draconian makes Arizona's SB 1070 look like a day at the races. Alabama anti-immigrant law has taken effect, and the federal court has allowed the provisions to go into effect. Well, in Blount County, Alabama, there's a sign on the door at the All Good Water Works. I think they may have to be revisiting the name of that. The sign on the door says, "Attention all water customers. To be compliant with new laws concerning immigration, you must have an Alabama driver's license or an Alabama picture ID card on file at this office before September 29th, 2011, or you may lose water service. Thank you." Undocumented immigrants in the state of Alabama are now not even allowed water. Now, you don't get a more faithy kind of community than you do in the state of Alabama. I mean, they're just swimming in Baptists and Methodists and Presbyterians and Episcopals and Catholics and every religion under the sun, as long as it's got some Jeebus in it. Why, there's even Jewish folk in Alabama, and they don't like to talk about it, but there's probably a few Muslims, too. Interestingly, the Muslim and Jewish faiths would frown, I think, on denying another human being water. I have to imagine the Roman Catholic faith doesn't think too well of it, nor do the Episcopals. But you can't hardly be a member of the Alabama legislature without being some kind of fundy. Preferably a white one. And Christians voted in favor of this bill. Here is the language from HB 56 in the state of Alabama. "An alien not lawfully present in the United States shall not enter into or attempt to enter into a business transaction with the state or a political subdivision of the state, and no person shall enter into a business transaction or attempt to enter into a business transaction on behalf of an alien not lawfully present in the United States. A violation of this section is a Class C felony." Wow, there's a call out to the Christian community. You know, getting water in their names for water service in their names, so that people of brown or coppery skin can have water. Don't look for that to start happening anytime soon. It's a Class C felony. It's punishable by up to 10 years in prison. Trying to get water can get you 10 years in prison in the state of Alabama. As of September 1st, the Montgomery Water Works Board and Sewer Authority started requiring customers to prove their legal status. Alabama Power, a for-profit electricity company, has told at least one family they can't get electricity because of the new immigration law. They did that even though the state law only applies to political subdivisions and, what does it say? State or a political subdivision of the state. Amazing, isn't it? Ugly business. So just for the fun of it, I got to thinking. And it is prayer meeting Wednesday, after all. And we got to have this little Bible in prayer meeting Wednesday, don't we? Yes, of course we do. And I ran over to the fourth chapter of the Gospel of John. And it reads as follows. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee. And he must needs go through Samaria. Tough place, Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. That'd be around noonish. It's a picaresque little passage, isn't it? You can see Jesus all foot sore and tired, and it's Jacob's well, hereditarily or according to custom or local myth. Big doings around that well in the history of the region. And of course, there's Jebus, a direct descendant of Jacob. This direct descendant of David, according to the book of Matthew. So Jesus kicks back against the edge of the well there. You can almost see him propping up one foot over his knee and maybe taking a sandal off and looking at the boys. Saying, my dogs are killing me. So he's sitting there hanging out, wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about noonish. Hours of the day being measured from daybreak upwards, so yeah, about noon. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, give me to drink. Because you don't just go up and start drinking out of somebody else's well. That can get you killed. And Jesus is by himself at this point, for his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest a drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Beginning to catch on to why I went here. Jesus answered and said unto her, if thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water. The woman saith unto him, sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? Suddenly I'm not so sure I want to drink out of that well with the cattle there and everything. Well, never mind. Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. Now this is from the book of John, okay? Matthew, Mark, and Luke were probably written within 50 years or so of Jesus' murder. John is out there at around 125, 150 A.D., so there's no way that the author of John had any of this except by second hand, and so you get all this water of life business. Meanwhile, the woman of Samaria is still a little confused. The allegory is being lost on her. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. And Jesus saith unto her, Go, call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that saidst thou truly. Uh-oh, busted! The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and you say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus said unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when you shall never, neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem, worship the Father. You worship you know what, you know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. So, all this goes on there by Jacob's well. But ultimately, it is a story that begins in thirst at a well of a woman who is deemed subhuman to other people. So too, then, Alabama. There will be no water of everlasting life, not if the Alabama legislature and the Republicans that control it have anything to say about it. It is so bad in Alabama that with this goofball law, that if an undocumented immigrant goes to pay their taxes, they would be guilty of doing business with the state, and therefore, in paying their taxes, would be liable to be clapped in irons and thrown in prison for 10 years. Rather interesting, really, in light of the fact that if you're just a tax evader in Alabama and you get busted for state tax evasion, you're only down for a 5-year prison hitch. This vile, vile bit of legislation, this HB 56, has literally made it illegal to be a human being in Alabama for an entire class of people. Are you as gobsmacked as I am that a federal court said, yeah, go ahead, start implementing it, no problem? Why would this is the kind of stuff that we used to be told about went on behind the Iron Curtain. But now, of course, thanks to teabaggers and radical right-wingers, we have a cornbread curtain. And there are millions who live behind it. I, as a matter of fact, will be going, as noted, behind the cornbread curtain tomorrow. But I'm nice and doughy and pale pink, so I'll probably not have a lot of problems. And I'm going to Georgia instead of Alabama, but Georgia has its own stupid immigration law. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. These are all, you know, these are all the Bible Belt. And there is more hate manifested along the Bible Belt than in those secular humanistic states. Water! Water! No water for you, Latino. Isn't that just... I guess there's a lot of people out there who would say, well, you know, it's the South and they're that way. I can't quite get there. The absolute necessity of life. Water. And it's illegal to have if you cannot produce your papers. Breathtaking, isn't it? I get thirsty just talking about it. Not too long back, I lived for 8 days on nothing but cold, clear water. And yet someone similarly situated to me in the state of Alabama, but with a name like Ortega, Gutierrez, they wouldn't get the water either. When do we begin to have a conversation about what it really means in this country to be un-American? Because the very denial of water, the denial of electricity, the basic necessities of life itself is, in fact, un-American. Can you imagine trying to, erect the Statue of Liberty in 2011 with those words from Emma Lazarus carved upon that tablet that she holds? You're tired, you're poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Well, the tea baggers would bring a gun and a poorly spelled sign to make sure. What are they talking about? We don't want none of them people here. Water. So it's about 25 minutes before the hour. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. We've got a lot of other stuff to go into as well. There's a sidebar to the Alabama immigrant story we'll go into after the break. The phone lines are open. Let's get some conversation in because we won't be conversating for the next couple of days. Last chance before Monday, the 17th. It's conversation radio, after all. It's the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's listener-supported liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water. Old Dan and I, with throats burned dry and souls that cry for water.
Water.
Cool
water.
Clear
water.
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 Keep on moving them, don't you listen to him then. He's a devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The nights are cool and I'm a pool. Each star's a pool of water.
Cool water.
But with the dawn I'll wake and yawn and carry on to water.
Then don't you listen to him, then. He's the devil, not a man. And he spread the burning sand with water. Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
The shadows sway and seem to say, tonight we pray for water.
Cool water.
And way up there he'll hear our prayer and show us where there's
water. Cool, clear
water.
Keep a moving and don't you listen to him, Dan. He's the devil, not a man, and he spread the burning sand with water. Then can you see that big green tree where the water's running free and it's waiting there for me and you?
Then speed our sore, he's yearning for just one thing more than water.
Cool water.
Like me, I guess he'd like to rest where there's no quest for water.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius, we got your soap right here.
And other bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Inflatable pool full of dad's hot air. Well, I was 3 years old, splashing everywhere. And so began my love affair with water. Riverbank with all my friends, a big old rope tied to a limb. You're a big old wuss if you don't jump in the water. Yeah, when that summer sun starts to beat down, you don't know what to do.
Something old and a little something new going into the break. The Sons of the Pioneers, Cool Water. Coming out, Brad Paisley with a decidedly different take on water. You know, it occurs to me I hope the good, upstanding Christian white people of Alabama enjoy that water while they can, because it's getting poisoned, and they are downstream. The downstream from Appalachia, every damn drop that flows through that state finds its way there from here, where corporations like Alpha, formerly Massey, are poisoning it for all they're worth. Drink up, boys. Tasty. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, how are you?
Well, let's see. Tonight my subject is hypocrisy.
Oh, goody.
It's a good one. I like it. But first of all, before I get started on that, one thing I thought would have been any better on the Amish would have been if they had shown the mugshots and they'd been daguerreotypes. That's about the only thing I could.
Or I don't know, you know, charcoal drawings.
Well, but the thing was, just seeing Amish mugshots just kind of blew your mind. You know?
Yeah, what?
That's one of those things you thought you'd never see.
Well, I'm scrolling along. What? And it looked like one of them had done got it. I don't know. Man, no, he was just 28 years old. He didn't have him a good foot-long Amish beard yet, I guess.
I know. Well, you know what that is? I assume that's similar to the way it used to be in the Chinese. Remember back, it's probably 150 years ago, where the way you really shamed somebody of Chinese descent was you cut their ponytail. Because that was part of theirs too. You know what I mean? The longer
right.
They grew their hair.
Well, you know, there's a number of religions throughout the world, Luke, that just have this thing about hair.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, whether it's Samson getting shorn by Delilah, or you can't be a member of the Taliban without having a nasty old beard with a family of rats living in it, or you know several other religions. Got to have that facial hair. God put it there. You by God got to grow it.
Okay, let me get into one because I'm going to get in and get out because I know you got a lot of people wanting to call tonight. I just found it so amazing to sit here and listen to all this stuff on the people up at Wall Street. And I was watching, I tell you the one I've been watching, Jon Stewart last week. And he just tore it up really good. He was showing the, boys over at the almost, the fake news network. And we're showing them, had one with Hannity. And he was doing this long diatribe about, you know, about hurting people and all this stuff, you know, that were out there just being there, supporting their own rights. And it's like, whoops, oh, that's from 2008. And he was talking about the Tea Party, but it was exactly applicable to the people up on Wall Street. And it's just amazing to watch the old boys up at Fox News now. Oh, these people are evil, evil, even though they don't.
Bongo drums, marijuana, bongo drums.
Yeah, at least they didn't bring AK-47s with them to the meetings.
You know, I'll take a bongo drum over an AK-47 any week, Lou.
I know, but could you imagine if these people showed up with rifles with them? Oh, Lordy, the people at Fox News would start having, their heads would start exploding.
And you know what the proof of that is? I got an email earlier today from one of these weirdo right-wingers that they're constant. I don't know how I got on their list, but I'm there. They're all over themselves because they finally found some guy somewhere advocating violence. This coming out of Occupy LA. And the quote is, one of the speakers said the solution is nonviolent. No, my friend, I'll give you two examples. French Revolution and Indian so-called revolution. And ultimately the bourgeoisie won't go without violent means. Revolution, yes, revolution that is led by the working class. So, oh, God, one guy said it should be violent, so the whole thing is violent. Right, got it?
Oh, yeah, you know, one person held up that one sign, so that, of course, is the whole group is behind that one sign. It's like, you know, guys, there's always somebody on the fringe. We accept that. You know what I mean? You're going to have the one standing over there going, you know, with the sign up saying, save the whales. You're like, what? But that's going to happen. I mean, you know, but it's like, guys, this is not the mainstream part of the group. But you got to do a little bit of editing in your.
Well, and you know, we know from what that, goober from, the American Spectator did last week.
Which one?
The one who instigated the small-scale violence there at the Air and Space Museum.
Yeah. And, well, he was like, let's go on in. You know, that's breaking the law. Let's go on in. They're like, no. Well, you know, it's like that thing.
But, if some guy's saying, no, let's kill some people, you know, my money says that guy's probably a plant anyway.
Well, I was about to say, isn't that what happened, was about 4 or 5 years ago, that they, the Bushies were investigating some group, and you found out the guy in the group that was advocating the violence was the FBI plant?
Exactly. And, you know, just about every so-called terrorism prosecution in this country, Luke, involves some FBI agent going up to some ne'er-do-well going, hey, if we gave you a basketball and some new tennis shoes, would you blow up the Sears building? Well, sure, okay.
That's still the best one, nine guys without shoes.
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay, cool.
But the guys in Miami, oh, good.
Yeah, or the, you know, and they got a conviction out of the guys who wanted to bomb some military installation in New Jersey by pretending to deliver pizzas.
I know.
And again, you know, there's an FBI guy. There's always an FBI guy on hand saying, hey, you know, let's blow something up.
Okay, I got one for you now. We're talking about hypocrisy. I've just been watching all this stuff the last day or so. Oh, we're so bent out of shape because they were trying to get somebody to assassinate a Saudi diplomat. And I'm sitting there going, let's see now. In 2002, how many times did we try to kill Saddam Hussein before the war? By bombing any building we thought he was in?
Yeah, we did kind of do that.
And then this last one with, oh, shoot.
Alaki?
Mo? No, the one with Gaddafi?
Yeah, well, yeah.
you know, where they were doing the same thing, you know, I'd be amazed.
So, yeah, right. So even if you take it at face value that the Iranians actually did that, they're taking a page out of our playbook, right?
I was going to say, yeah, then when did our guys get put in jail? I'm curious. You know,
when we do it, it's good. That's the difference.
Of course. That's just the way it goes. You know how that is. And what's the other one? I had one other shoot.
But, you know, this is all just run up to an attempt to try to pressure a little, you know, bombing campaign against Iran. I've already seen that coming out of there it is.
Was this the man with the opinionated mustache?
No. This is Representative Pete Hoekstra.
Oh God, yes.
The plot will heighten tensions throughout the Middle East. These are acts of war, and they need to be viewed and treated as such. This is a rogue nation. They're developing nuclear weapons. They're an outlaw state, and for them to undertake, participate, or lead this type of effort shouldn't be surprising. What should be surprising is the Obama administration's reaction to this regime in Iran since they've been in office. Yeah. Bomb them! Jesus, start bombing now! Come on, bomb them, please! I mean, hasn't the Obama... But that's the way it is with Republicans. If he was bombing kittens, they'd want more kittens bombed.
Well, I'm sitting there thinking about that, and I'm sitting there going, okay, Mr. Huckster, as long as you do the slim pickings on the first wave of bombs.
Right, exactly. It go in there nice and low. Sure. Oh, he could make it! But the thing is, I mean, it's not like...
Let loose.
Now... We've entered into extrajudicial killings. Obama, with ice water in his veins, ordered the assassination of Osama bin Laden, took out al-Awlaki and another American citizen. He just can't kill enough people to make the Republicans happy.
I know. It's like, you know, 8 years and Bush couldn't get him. It took Obama 2 years, and it still isn't enough for him. Sorry. You know... They wouldn't have been happy if they had brought him back over, stuck his head on the pike, and walked it around Pennsylvania Avenue for a day. You know,
Well, I got to say that you being a Tennessean and all, I'm surprised you haven't brought up the Curry Todd story.
The DUI thing?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was going to, but I thought you might cover that any which way, because that was just such a cool story. You're just like, oh gee.
Now here's a former Memphis police officer, sits on the corrections committee in the Tennessee State Legislature. he's the guy who thought it would be a great idea to let Tennesseans take their guns to bars, and what happened?
He gets pulled over for DUI with the gun sitting on the seat.
Well, tucked in between the console and the driver's seat. You know,
okay.
That's where, so you can get it at it in a fast draw situation.
Where it was easily visible, let's put it that way.
And this guy, you know, this guy has a history. Now,
oh, yeah.
Now the arrest report said he was fallen. This is not a quote. This is, he was sometimes barely able to stand. You know, that's law enforcement speak for falling down drunk.
Yep, it is.
And
speaker, he's got to be hanging onto the side of the car. He's going to lay on the ground.
I'm, you know, where are the NRA press releases when I need them, Luke?
As you say, crickets.
Nothing but.
I'm sure we won't. I'm hoping we do, but I'm sure we probably won't be able to get to see the camera view from the arresting officer's car.
Oh, but wouldn't it be fun?
Oh yeah, but of course I'm sorry that one got messed up. We're sorry. We can't take care of it. We can't do you anything with that one. We're sorry. It's just totally gone away. It's like, God almighty. You know, just sometimes these people you're just like, you just want to look at them and just kind of go, you keep saying you're religious people. Why aren't you under the car? Because you've got to be really feared that lightning is getting you really good. You know? If you want to tell me you believe in the Sky Father, then the Sky Father every once in a while you got to think he'll let go and just take burn that one or two of you all just for the fun of it, you know, just to keep his hand practiced.
Yeah, right. Just to keep in the game.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, some of this stuff's just blowing your mind. Okay, I'm gonna bring up our 1 second of football.
Okay.
Well, next 3 weeks, I live in Ground Zero.
Yeah, you got a tough road to hoe here for a little bit.
Well, shoot, yeah, you see, you have your quarterback break his thumb. So he's out for 6 weeks. So you go back to the fifth-year senior is now the quarterback.
Yeah, but at least you're not Florida. They're out there scouting for a seventh grader who can quarterback now.
This too is true. It's sort of like, anybody on the line know when I throw the ball? I mean, it's like, hey, you're the guy in the center. Now, if you just aim it a different direction, can you do the same thing? It's like, no. Oh, yeah, the next 3 weeks, LSU, Alabama, and South Carolina.
Yeah, but see, LSU's, I keep saying it, they got a loss in their pocket.
Well,
I personally think it'll come November 5th if it doesn't come before.
It's like, hey, it's the one game I know we're up for because after last year, we really want to kick their asses.
But, you know, you can't feel too bad about the Vols overall, Luke, because they're kind of playing behind the eight ball as it is. You know, a lot of youth on that team, but I think young Derek Dooley will bring them along quite nicely. And you know what? I love his mama.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
I thought would have been any better if she'd done it on Feinbaum's show. It would have been more fun. But
when your mom, when you're the head coach of one of the elite college football programs in the country, and your mama calls a sports call-in show and delivers Hail Columbia to the otherwise kind of dumb host. Did you actually get to hear that? Because I heard.
Yeah, I got to hear part of it. And I didn't get to hear it live, but I got to hear the playing of it. Yeah, they played it on a couple of the sports shows around here just for the fun of it.
Yeah, Derek Dooley is on the hot seat. I don't think so.
Oh.
That's just damn crazy. Yeah, Mama Dooley into the sherry and going to call her a sports show. But then again, I guess she'd had a radio show of her own at one point, so No, she was.
She used to do it with Vince. Her and Vince used to do some stuff, I think, one time.
She was a delight.
Oh, she was. Hey, what's going on up your all's way? The big thing down here is, like they say, they're still trying to figure out who the 14th team is.
Well, I'd like for it to be us.
Well, like I say, the main ones we've considered are you all, I think, and the one I'm pulling for right now is Louisville.
As between us and Louisville, I think you'd rather have us.
I know, but you know what I mean.
No offense to Brother Corey there in the free state of Louisville, but no.
I understand, but you know what I mean. They're just going through all the listings of the ones.
Well, you know what? It would have been Missouri, Luke, if Missouri could have kept their mouth shut about. Well, all right, we were kind of hoping for the Big Ten, but if we got to go to the SEC, we will.
Yeah, that's sort of like saying, you know, yeah, we'd go there if that's the only choice we got. Yes.
Okay. Goodbye.
Well, you know how it is. Georgia Tech once was part of the SEC. We put them back in.
Well, the SEC was born out of the Southern Conference.
Well, you got to remember one time Swanee was part of the SEC.
Yes, it was. And the Southern Conference, you know, the SEC split off from the Southern Conference. And, of course, West Virginia has an old and distinguished history inside the Southern Conference.
I know. Well, you know what I mean. A bunch of the radio talk shows here are all just kind of pushing which one's their favorite. You got people pushing for Georgia Tech. People keep the big one they really want is, as you know, they want Florida State. That's who they really got the heart on for. You know what I mean? That's who they want in. But like I say, you got you all up there.
But Florida State can't. Florida State's hard pressed to win the ACC.
I know, but they just. A lot of the sports talk people have just got it for them and just can't get let go of it. You know, there's some around here that want Clemson, and there's some around here that want, you know, everybody's got their own favorite.
You got to think South Carolina would take it personally inviting Clemson in.
Well, that's one thing. I'm sitting there going, you know, guys, if this is the case, why don't we invite one of the North Carolina teams? Because we ain't got nobody in North Carolina.
And I have every faith in the world that West Virginia will be left on the outside looking in when all is said and done.
I'm sure they'll pick somebody that none of us will.
I mean, honest to God, everybody. Syracuse and Pitt to the ACC? That just beat cat's effing. You know, I mean, it just did.
I know. It's just one of those things that sometimes you're just sitting there going, you know, and y'all ever look at a map just for the fun of it? You know, it's like, say, at the rate they're going, I'm pretty sure that UTEP's going to wind up in the Big East. you know, I got to...
Oh, yeah, and then we got stiffed by TCU. That was a that was fun. that was dumber than tits on a tree to begin with. You know, TCU to the Big East, please.
And I'm sitting there going, Baylor just really shot themselves, because, like I say, guys, you just kind of ticked off everybody else. You ain't going nowhere. You're stuck where you are for a while. So your best short joint chance right now is you better be looking for Mountain West.
But the other thing, you know, we talk football, but there's a darn good reason to add WVU to the SEC. Hmm. Basketball.
Well, see, that's the other reason that people are pushing Louisville.
Yeah, but you know that's
I know, but you know what I mean. It just depends who you are. Which it just, you know, different people are bringing up different programs for different reasons. You know, as I say, the one I was talking about was talking about one of the North Carolinas, just because, hey, we ain't got nobody in there. Same way up your old way, we ain't got anybody really up that way, because a bunch of them are wanting Virginia Tech, and we're just like going, no. Virginia Tech is the boy standing on the banana peel, just waiting to see what's going to fall down as they fall down the steps.
Well, and you don't want sooner or later Virginia Tech's going to be a team in transition, because Frank Beamer he's got to retire someday. He's not going to stay. You know, he's not going to do it Paterno, I don't think.
But
see, that's the thing that bothers me. I think there are people up in the administration at WVU that really, really, really want to go to the Big Ten, because they want to get that Penn State rivalry back.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, somewhere at the end of all this, are we going to wind up with like five super conferences of 16 teams apiece?
Yes. That's what's going to happen. And if you're on the outside looking in, you're screwed. You're Division I, AA, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they did all this thing with A&M. Is because when they had the whole thing with the stuff up there with the Big Ten, Big 12, whatever you want to call them now, that they were afraid of being left on the outside and scrambling, having to take a bunch of smaller teams to make up their extra teams.
Right, right.
Because like I say, everybody's going to wind up with a 16 team conference eventually. It's just which 16 teams you wind up with.
And it's just a mess. They are slowly but surely doing their dead level best to ruin the game. Luke, it's awful good to hear from you, brother.
Hey, I was going to say one other thing, one quick thing. It's just amazing to watch this stuff on some of this stuff, you know, where they're talking about the underwear bomber, I guess, has decided to confess.
Yeah, 2 days into the trial, decided he was going to plead guilty.
I'm surprised he waited that long. I figured he would have done it during the opening statements, just to make life interesting.
Yeah.
Because you could tell the boys over at Fox wanted a nice drawn-out trial.
Well, drawn-out trial, hell, they wanted broadcast rights to the execution.
I know. But let me let you go on, bud. Like I say, you got more people to talk to tonight. You have a good time, and talk to you next week.
All right, take care, Luke. Bye now.
Bye, see you. Bye.
From the hills of East Tennessee, that's our buddy, Brother Luke. Oops, okay. Email coming in from Vince. College is good, but two words: Detroit Lions. This team hasn't done well since before I was born. It's like they're welcoming me home. Vince from Detroit, formerly Florida, formerly Georgia. Vince is getting around. Yeah, who can? Yeah, who can? Who? How can you not root for Detroit? And by the way, I said the other night that with little Timmy Jebo, you know, by the way, that little Timmy Jebo has been named the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos just in time for the bye week, followed by a visit to the winless Miami Fish. You know, a sort of a homecoming for little Timmy. Right. Well, they do go to Detroit, they play Detroit after they play Miami. Stay healthy, Ndamukong Suh. Stay healthy. Eat your vegetables, sir. Because I want to see you snap little Timmy Tebow into tiny, bitsy fundamentalist pieces. Because I'm mean that way. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, you ready for some football?
Yeah, let's don't sing.
God, I always hated that neck. I hated him the very first time I ever heard him.
Well, now he shows up on The View, Reverbo.
You're just a drunk, fried stone jerk. I mean, and like you didn't know. Like nobody had a clue.
Right. Yeah, he shows up on The View, I guess, yesterday. Hank Williams, Bo Sleefless, shows up on The View and starts talking about cow turds.
I'm sure he knows plenty about that.
God almighty.
Well, there's so much to cover. I don't, not enough time. So we have no time to lose. Bob, we must unleash the forces of the free market to get our economy going again.
Do you have to do that at a mountaintop with a ring or something, Reverbo? I mean, Jesus.
And
the best part of it all is that's a statement straight off of the fingertips of Rince Priebus and of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat.
You got that right. I mean, I'm sure you do what I do. I'm on all their mailing lists. So we have to keep track of what these people are up to.
Well, it's a little giggle just to get your day started. I saw that come in. Holy hell. Yeah, tell us who won last night's debate from the Republican and National Committee. What a great debate last night in New Hampshire.
Well, I'm just reading out. What a great debate we had. I think all our candidates did an exceptional job. I'm reading this verbatim, how they would turn America around and end Barack Obama's leftist assault on our nation's prosperity, that incredible prosperity we've been having.
Is that what that is, Reverbo?
Where have I been? Where have I been?
Our nation's prosperity.
God. Yeah. Our nation's prosperity.
Because we're all prosperous, and there's that heathen communist Obama out there with a leftist assault running around in his little Che Guevara T-shirt and everything. I opened this thing for, and I thought, Jesus, it's from The Onion.
You're on Rince's, you're on the Priebus mailing list, I'm sure.
Oh, right? I am.
I know, it's too good. And that really is his name, right?
R-E-I-N-C-E, Priebus. Like I said, okay. You know, he sounds like something from a bad movie serial. Rince Priebus of the Imperial Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat. I'll save you!
Yeah, or something out of, like, some hideous, some bad science fiction movie or something.
Quick, you know, Splat! To the free market cave!
Exactly. real quick, one thing I heard, I'm listening to the radio a couple weeks ago, like I never do that, and they're talking about this. I guess we got some trade deals coming up with Panama and a couple other countries. They're trying to sign on the dotted line here, and to get them to lower. You get rid of your tariffs, we'll get rid of our tariffs, and everything will just be cool. Quote, we'll get that economy growing again. And so the guy, they talk.
Unleash the forces of the free market.
God, strap in, everybody, and. So they get this person on who evidently he doesn't really have a possum in the fight. He's just somebody, some academician who they ask him, so will this really create more jobs in the U.S.? Exactly how is this going to help? And the guy just says, nah, it'll just be negligible. And in fact, it doesn't matter. And it occurred to me that it doesn't matter. And I wish they would quit trying to tell me how much it matters. Because they don't give a shit.
Yeah, because it's a little, after a while, it gets to feeling a little insulting, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't, they don't give a shit if it creates even one job. I mean, this is radically, they're over-chumped at this point. I mean, you know, the guy said, well, yeah, there's a couple of U.S. companies that might, like, you know, making some, I don't know what, heavy equipment and tractor parts or who knows what that maybe we could sell to Panama. They'd buy more of these if the tariffs were reduced. But he goes, honestly, what do we buy from Panama? No.
Hats? No, they're made in Ecuador. Damn.
I mean, they don't care. It doesn't matter. And then these idiots who are trying to, you know, this nonstop ridicule of the occupation of Wall Street, which really you and I know should be an occupation of Washington, D.C. But there's...
And has become both. There's been some arrests in D.C.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, from, you know, like Occupy Capitol Hill.
Well, I mean, that's...
But nobody's been spit on yet, so we're still not up there at the quality level of the teabaggers yet.
Hmm. Yeah, you can just... Who was just talking? Just imagine if these people showed up packing heat, you know, making some stupid statement about the, you know... You'd never hear the end of it.
No,
they're showing up packing pizzas and pita bread, and they're still getting ridiculed. Hey, don't they know that we're broke?
Damn it! I have a bongo and I'm not afraid to use it. Yeah, see, it doesn't have the ring, does it?
No, and guess what? We're not broke, and we never were broke. We just have, as they say, a crisis of distribution. Tons of money. Hey, just think. I don't know. I'll just throw this out. Maybe there's people who have a brain who might remember, like, how much money people spend on, I don't know, lobbying. How much money people spend on elections. We're not broke. The whole thing is just a freaking joke. But I do like the fact that they're out there, because sooner or later this was going to happen. There's going to be a response to this. And I love it. My question is, who's going to step up and put themselves out front? Where's our George McGovern going to be? Who's going to step up, Bob?
You know, that's something we've kind of been discussing over the last few shows, and that is this really a situation where anyone can? I mean, doesn't it look shamelessly opportunistic if anybody tries to run out in front of the parade? You know what I mean?
Maybe. You mean they're going to scream co-opt?
Right. And of course, Andy just Monday night was talking about how he said, you know, I don't think either political party is particularly welcome at these things, because these are people who believe that both political parties are the problem. And that in itself is disturbing to me, Reverbo, because one side is a much greater problem than the other side.
Right, we have to be careful of the false equivalency of fallacy once again. But I mean, you got to have a huge.
I mean, they had a vote. They had a vote on the so-called jobs bill in the Senate, right? A procedural vote on whether to cut off debate.
It died, right?
It failed.
Yeah.
It failed, thanks in part to the help from a couple of ostensibly Democratic senators. One of whom was, of course, this is just too easy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Ben Nelson.
Oh, of course.
And the thing on his head. But that seems fairly clear to me. Yes, there are some Democrats who are a problem. The electoral process can take care of them, Reverbo. But it was the vast majority, the entirety of the Republican Party in the Senate that would not let this go forward, would not let it go over to the House for a vote. And the reason they didn't let it go over to the House for a vote is because they were protecting the essential naysaying nature of the Republican House. Make sense?
Oh, yeah.
If it just dies in the Senate, then everybody gets to, well, see, both sides are the problem. There was Democrats and Republicans that voted that way, and, well, damn it, you know, they're a pox on all their houses. Not really.
No, not really. But the whole thing begs the question, okay, so it almost seems like this is just really tailor-made for the third party. I realize there's all these problematic issues. We don't have instant runoffs, and we don't have proportional representation and all this kind of shit. But good grief, there's only two political parties. One is completely run by crazy vampires, and the other one is about 30% full of them. I mean, it almost is tailor-made for the for this party, whatever this party might be.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's true that all these polls really do say, I think I heard some Republican yesterday or today actually get on the radio and say, well, you know, if the people just are unhappy with the fact that, you know, our stated goal is just to run Obama out of there after one term, no matter what, then I guess let the chips fall where they may. Did you hear that guy? Did you hear that quote?
Yes.
So they're not. I mean, there's nothing pretty out front about this. And they always have been. What do you mean, let the chips fall where they may? So what does that mean? You're not interested in seeing the White House for the next 200 years? Of course, that's what we thought 4 years ago.
Well, I mean, did you see any of the pageant last night?
You know, I can't watch that. My specialist said I shouldn't be watching it.
Right, I know. It makes your liver quiver, right?
I can't do it.
But
I mean, had I still been on the same circus animal tranquilizers that I used to thrive on in decades past, I wouldn't have missed it, of course. But I'm kind of, you know, it's touch and go with me here.
It was. I know TV's not big on your list or anything, but you know, Subway sandwiches, which I despise, have a commercial now. You know, $5 foot long, $5. It was like a Subway commercial every time Herb Cain opened his mouth, $9.99. Until I can't remember if it was somebody who was actually at the debate or some commentator who said for a while there I thought he was talking about pizza prices.
Did she really call him Herb?
Well, no, that's what Mussolini, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla called him. So
right.
You know, she's right about everything. So necessarily he has to be Herb Cain.
That's
Herb Becky Stan Kane, as a matter of fact.
I can't help but hear about these things. Bachman turning the 999 on its head and making some clever comment about the devil and the triple sixes and all this nonsense. Or maybe not such nonsense.
No, maybe not. You know, Willard Romney there, just... This was, you know, supposed to be all about Rick Perry has to bounce back.
Oh.
Well, Romney looked at him and said, excuse me, I'm still talking here. I said, I'm still talking. And Rick Perry meekly shut up.
So this is the best they've got. Their entire political party is hopeless, and these are the best candidates they have.
Right, and the only guy who's even remotely sane, the other Mormon in the bunch... John Huntsman, who I still maintain is a
mole,
right?
Yeah,
is the only one who makes any sense at all, and that's only on days that you know have R's in them. And naturally, he's at 3%. I don't know if he'll ever even get his chance to be the flavor of the week. You know, the not Romney guy. Because, you know, it's Romney versus the not Romney. And, you know, at one point Sarah Palin was the not Romney, and then Michelle Bachman was the not Romney, and now Herb Cain is the not Romney. Rick Perry was the not Romney. They were hoping, Christy Cream Christy would be the not Romney, but he decided to, oh, God, it was pathetic. And then Christie shows up in this news conference, and it was hilarious because the positioning in the news conference was exactly the same positioning that Saturday Night Live had Christie and Romney in Saturday night.
I saw that. That was great. Yeah.
Well, it was exact. You know how Romney was standing over his shoulder and everything in the Saturday Night Live skit. Well, when Christie announced that he was endorsing Romney, they were in exactly the same real-world, actually, position. It was hilarious.
Nice.
And then Romney announced that Christie is, of course, on his short list for vice president.
Fine. That makes me feel a lot better. None of these people are even going to come within 1,000 miles of the White House.
You can't. You can't imagine how they could.
No, you can't. So, why are we, are things no better now than they were 4 years ago? All I can figure is that if only our friend Barack had, somebody told him that healthcare was a good one to just jump out of the gate with, and I think that might have been the initial problem, not to mention hiring Timmy Geithner and Larry Summers and the rest of that gang. But shit. I mean, it's just right there, and here's another thing for you. I mean, these people, you know, that's why I mean they should be occupying Washington. You know, yeah, it's fine, you know, getting angry and legitimately angry with Wall Street. I mean, these people are criminals. But, you know, you can't cheat honest men. And I just started to think about, okay, so to make this very, very simple for me, these people are supposed to administer to the wishes of the majority, they're not just supposed to get, you know, hoarded out by their corporate pimps. That's not the way it works.
Not the way.
So the question sort of is the question that begs is, so what if they don't do what we want them to do?
That's the big one.
Well, it is the big one. And in the 60s, since the left didn't make friends with the folks who had the bullets and the machine guns, some of the left got mowed down. It eventually turned around, but there was blood in the streets, as Jim Morrison sang. This time, it sort of seems like if people are smart about it, you know, which, again, it's too bad the teabaggers are just so stratospherically idiotic, because they really would be useful. Because they do hate the same thing we hate, they just don't know why.
Yeah, and remember, I mean...
The teachers know why, the cops know why, anybody in a union knows why, every woman knows why.
Jesus, knows why. Females in Kansas know why. Did you see this one?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, in Topeka... Topeka, Kansas has repealed its law against domestic violence.
Oh, no. Do I always have to be wrong? It's okay now to beat your girlfriend, beat your wife?
Well, it's just not a crime.
Oh, it's just not a crime. Oh.
Yeah, and of course, and it's being done under the guise, Reverbo, of austerity. The New York Times story by A.G. Sulzberger reading as follows. The startling vote came up at a city council meeting here on Tuesday, provoked by a run-of-the-mill budget dispute over services that had spun out of control, decriminalized domestic violence. They don't have the money to enforce the domestic violence law, so they're just going to repeal it, and they have.
Okay, but let's keep throwing people in jail for smoking pot. I think that's a good plan.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, we do know that there are some folks who are so beyond chumped that they're no hopers.
Oh, I like the use of that phrase earlier, over-chumped.
Over-chumped, yeah. Well, that's what they're trying to do now. I mean,
I didn't know that was possible.
I don't know, when people are complaining that everybody's retiring too soon, I think you're reaching an over-chumped level at that point. You remember all that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to remind these people. So that assumes that we're all universally under the age of 40 and we already have a job.
Yeah, yes.
I can tell you for a fact. I can talk to you about age discrimination. I can talk to you about sex discrimination. Well, reverse sex discrimination. Because I can't get hired at the library. Men don't get hired there. And anyway, I thought, you know, didn't the wealthy, they were never part of this equation. They always had plenty. They had tons of leisure time. They were never part of the utopia that we were going to have. They were never part of this future that everybody was, you know, dreaming about. They weren't even, they had plenty of time to sit by the pool. They didn't even, you know. I guess we retired too soon, yeah.
That's what it is.
God.
Absolutely.
I'll leave you with this one thing, and I I this is another strange thing. There's this weird nostalgia that's sort of a nostalgia contest, if you will, and it seems like one is valid and one is totally false. The conservatives are these weird, the freaks seem to be all sentimental and nostalgic for this, the Leave It to Beaver world where, right, you could beat your wife and you could, and she was, if she,
And you went, and your little white children went to little white schools.
Yeah, you know, everybody knows how this works. And
Herman Cain brought you your pizzas.
Right, and he didn't, and he never showed up at your country club unless it was to serve you drinks, and all of this kind of stuff. Except funny, they're not nostalgic for the marginal tax rates of that time, are they?
Right, that funded all of that.
Right, that made all that sort of possible for everybody. Whereas, it seems like whatever you want to call the rest of us, the liberals or the progressives, I don't know what to call us anymore.
Not me either.
Our nostalgia, though, seems to be kind of valid. It seems to be, I'm nostalgic for a time when my kids had it better than I did, when there was social and economic mobility, when there was, you know, when you could, prosperity really meant, you know, everybody's in this together. And of course, nobody, you know, we didn't hate the rich. We all, matter of fact, we all thought we could get rich.
Yeah, the possibility existed.
Right, and so it seems like there's this weird shit going on once again. Where's Joe Bajant when you need him?
Well, that's the God's honest truth. And you know, you talk about our kids having, the next generation having it better than the previous generation. Well, that no, not in the new normal. And of course, you've got, you know, he doesn't have a TV show anymore. So naturally, the Beckerhead was invited to the Values Voters Summit, where he said, not kidding, he mocked students who can't afford a college education. He said, well, then go to the free public library.
There's a nostalgia for a world where only rich people can be healthy, can be educated, can, I don't know, how about can vote? Why don't we just go back to that?
Well, and let me throw in just one more for you, just for the fun of it. This came from our buddy Dr. John, the archaeologist in upstate New York earlier today, and because once upon a time I had a cup of coffee thinking about being an anthropology archaeology major, that field of study has a big huge part of my heart. Because I love what happens out of it. We find, you know, it's the study of being human, you know? Why do we do the things we do?
The cooking ape or whatever you wrote about.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, all that. Yeah, it's all cool, yeah.
John wrote to me earlier today, there is a flap a-brewing in Florida. Because Rick Scott, the governor down there, the one who doesn't like railroads, you know, because the maglev bullet train will never leave Kissimmee, he's started a war against anthropologists. It's really kind of breathtaking. I gotta find this. Yeah, here it is. Because his words are, now remember, you know, Rick Scott ran the biggest fraudulent Medicare fraud healthcare dodge in American history, right? And of course, naturally, he gets to become governor of Florida.
Naturally.
This is a quote on a radio show somewhere in Florida. We don't need a lot more anthropologists in the state. It's a great degree if people want to get it, but we don't need them here. I want to spend our dollars giving people science, technology, engineering, and math degrees. That's what our kids need to focus all their time and attention on, those types of degrees, so when they get out of school, they can get a job.
Yeah, you want me to believe that. That's not from The Onion, is it?
No.
Okay.
Sadly not.
You don't want one of those, like, you don't want to get a Bachelor of Arts degree in anthropology. That'd be useless.
It's you know, Mother Jones has had an article, an editorial called Rick Scott to Liberal Arts Majors Drop Dead.
Oh, man, I had all this time, and I never knew. I thought anthropology was a science.
Well, yeah, I mean, and not just a meta-science, because it pulls together all the sciences. You know, if you're studying why humans do what humans do, you want to bring together all the myriad things humans do. You get it.
Unless you're just a fucking chump, and then you don't. Then you want to run for office.
Right, and it's like John said. So clearly, the problem isn't, as he says, too much funding for a program that won't employ Floridians. After all, how many college football players end up playing professionally? The American Anthropological Association is the largest professional group of working anthropologists working in academia, business, industry, and government, including the military. It has over 11,000 members, and the writer of the piece says, and I can say with certainty that it represents only a fraction of degreed working anthropologists. Now, just because my mind, by virtue of doing this for a number of years, has become paranoid and sick and twisted and I should probably be medicated, I wrote back and I said, listen, I know why he's doing this. Care to guess?
I'd just rather you tell me straight out.
Okay. Well, Florida lives and dies because, you know, their tax structure has been gutted under Jeb Bush and Charlie Crist. They got no tax structure left. You know, they can't afford to educate their kids anymore. So we're just going to cut it all down to math and science, right? Never mind that reading and writing. But Florida exists on overdevelopment. If you can't put a condo, a strip mall, or some sort of housing development on it, it has no value in Florida. And what happens is when you go digging around, there's been a lot of people in Florida over a lot of millennia. And I'll bet you dollars to donuts, Reverbo, that Governor Rick Scott of Florida hates anthropologists and archaeologists. Every time we try to get some economic development in this state, put some people to work, a building a new condominium high-rise in a hurricane zone or something, there's some damned archaeologist down there going, golly damn, I done found an arrowhead. Stop the construction.
That must piss him off.
I mean, does that make sense? I mean, does that jibe?
Oh, it makes perfect sense because it's not just in Florida. This sort of thing happens when you got, like, these power companies that want to string these lines just miles and miles and miles across states like Colorado. You got the same thing. You're gonna have to pay for people to before you do it. We got to make sure. And I'm not, you know, we're not even talking about the value of studying history or the value of finding out who we are and where we've been and why, like you say, why we are the way we are. Screw that. It's just time for another strip mall. You know, all you folks are just getting in the way. Matter of fact. You know, what they want to do is piss in the stream. That's what they want to do.
It's about the size of it.
There's two. Now listen, I don't know about you, but I'm getting on the free market express nonstop to infinity. And if I was you, I would get there early for a good seat.
Well, you know, you want to be strapped in when they unleash the massive powers of the free market.
I can't wait. It's just going to be, great. I mean, if Rince Priebus says it's going to be great, that's good enough for
me. Well, as long as we can stop Obama's leftist assault on all of our prosperity.
Shit, too bad that no one wants any of those bullets, free market bullets, Ranger. We could be on that thing tonight.
God, you know, I know. It just makes you crazy, doesn't it?
All right, well, where are you going tomorrow and Friday?
I am leaving tomorrow and flying to Georgia.
Oh.
I will, I'll actually get to see the Atlantic coast.
Excellent.
And I'm hoping
about airships involved with the state of Georgia.
Yeah, well, at one point, the greatest single conglomeration of airships in the United States was right there near where I'm going.
Anything left? Any relics? Any museums? Anything?
I don't know. I'm going to have to investigate.
Okay. Well, you can't miss those airship pens. They're like the largest man-made structures ever, if you can imagine.
Oh, it'd have to be. Huge,
they
even.
Are.
I mean, even the ones that house the Goodyear blimp up in Akron, those things are massive.
Oh, God. They're nothing compared to the Silver Pelican or the Graf Zeppelin.
Oh, no. Those are pikers compared.
They're nothing. All right, well, you have a good time, and if you get a chance, make it personal down there.
You know what? I got a feeling there's going to be all kinds of personal down there. There's a bunch of good people getting together, and I've got to go and sort of explain and talk a little bit about what it is that Cold River Mountain Watch has been doing in the last year or so. So
very good, and don't forget your shrimp and grits.
Oh, see, I'm going to...
Sorry.
I don't know, shrimp and grits flavored water?
Yeah.
No, I know, it'll be impossible to avoid.
Well, do what you need to do.
I know. It's just
tough. All right, man, take it easy.
All right, make it personal.
Thank you.
Later, Reverbo.
Over and out.
Bye now. Airship, let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? Airship Commodore, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, who may actually be working on something new and wonderful for the Horn, even as we speak. Every now and then I just need to say I've got one. And if you've never read Reverbo's work, Cavalcade of Crazy, Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy, a five-part series that took up the better part of a year and more, What an amazing piece of writing that was. You can find it at headonradionetwork.com. Go and have a read. Read the whole thing all at once. It's amazing. It is nothing short of amazing. Brilliant, beautiful satire with a real edge and some biting reality, if you will. Onward. Okay. Rolling in... Oh, I do love a good play on words. Rolling in from William. A great historic ticket. Donald Trump and Ben Nelson with the rebirth of the Whig Party. One of these for you, William. And Ron and Raleigh writing with a query. I got your domestic violence. Has busting a cap in your abuser also been decriminalized? No. And Texas Betsy observing, this Kansas thing is the most horrific law change I have seen this year, even worse than the voting changes. Do we know how many women are on the city council there? And the short answer is no, but I can say that the vote was 7-3 on the Topeka City Council to decriminalize domestic violence. And of course, you know, it's Kansas, otherwise known as, where did I see this? Maybe over at Kurtz and Liars, Brown-Bakistan. But here's the reality. Several victims of domestic violence spoke against the proposal at the meeting, questioning whether it would succeed in forcing the district attorney to resume prosecutions. It is your responsibility to protect these people, and you're failing, said Matthew Agnew, 24, one such victim. 18 people have been arrested on domestic violence charges since September and released without charges because no agency is accepting new cases. That has raised concerns among advocates for victims of domestic violence, some of whom gathered Tuesday outside government buildings to express outrage over the gamesmanship. This is about the prosecutor saying he's not getting enough money in his budget and therefore handing the prosecution of domestic violence off to the city itself. Because after all, it's just a misdemeanor. But these are the sort of things that happen as you watch a nation take the sad, leaden steps toward utter dysfunction. File this next to the story of the firefighters in Tennessee watching the man's house burn down. File it next to the various and sundry cities in this country who have stopped paying to have the grass in their city parks mowed or the trash picked up. File this next to the stories of counties and states in this country who have actually ground up paved roads to turn them back into gravel because they can no longer afford to maintain hard road surfaces. And a woman or a man beaten and sometimes stabbed, cut, killed, shot by someone who loves them. Well, that's a big blinking neon sign on that road to dystopia. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
We love our dystopia.
And if we don't, we get it anyway.
Yep, pretty much it's a done deal on that. You know, talking about the craziness of the week is with the GOP debates, I'm really pretty much convinced now that with all of the statements coming out now that they're pretty much just throwing in the towel. They've given all the signals. The fact that Christie's aligning up with Romney, it could be that Romney will be the vice president nomination, and he'll be on the Romney-Christie ticket, and then that sets up Christie for 2016.
16.
Now, as far as – now, see, here's the thing about Jeb Bush. Someone brought this up. I think I got it from the National Review. They said that Jeb Bush would have been losing so much traction, so much visibility, and the fact that a lot of the radio stations are really ramping up for Christie, they play all his sound bites nonstop, Bob, on all the conservative radio stations. So if you really look at how everything's going right now, they're setting it up for like the Republicans are going to run on that anti-Uber presidential candidate. Well, are you going to complain he's fat? He knows what he's talking about. You just don't like him because he's fat.
Sadly true. You know, and the Saturday Night Live skit last week where he said, Romney, earmuffs, listen, I'm going to run in 2016. Everybody knows it. I just got to take care of a couple of things first.
Right, right. And it does no good, though, and this is something that a lot of progressives need to understand. It does no good, and I heard a lot of jokes on the radio, too, about his weight. You have to talk the talk, and you have to walk the walk, ladies and gentlemen. So if you do make fun of his weight, realize that when that comes up, they're just going to constantly have all of the sound bites all lined up.
Yeah, oh yeah, 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 yeah. And what, 60% of America experiences some degree or level of obesity?
Right, right. I mean,
that's like identification politics.
I mean, they...
And I say that as a guy who is carrying too much weight.
Right, we are girthers indeed. The progressives have fallen for the trap on all steps regarding making fun of Christie's weight. I've seen everybody do it. I've made a crack once or twice, but when you put it out in the public like that, you know, you're just gonna rally up the base. You're like, oh, you don't think a fat person can be president? You're crazy. I'll show you.
I know.
But there's something, this
goes back to something else. I don't openly despise Joe Biden.
Right.
At all. There's sometimes you can like him. Then you think about how he's bent over backwards for the banking industry, and you think, yeah, maybe not. and the bankruptcy stuff and so forth.
Yeah.
But that was one of the mistakes. I think it was a mistake for Obama to choose as a running mate somebody who doesn't have a prayer of running for his own presidency in 2016, assuming that Obama gets reelected.
Right.
Because that means it's going to be hell among the yearlings on both sides. You know, who will the Democrats run in 16? It ain't going to be Biden. I mean, I'm just saying.
They might twist Hillary's arm if she doesn't run as the vice president nominee.
Too old. No, it's going to have to be somebody young and hip.
Maybe Feingold.
Yeah, he will have been too far out of the spotlight for too long. But
there will always be a certain.
But the other thing, and it's kind of where I thought you were going to go, David.
Yeah.
Is that you know, once again we're getting sucked into talking about presidential politics.
Right.
Which is a problem. Two, as far as 2016 is concerned, as far as 2012 is concerned, that's where I was going, 2012. They put up a show, they put up a show that is similar to the 1996 running of Bob Dole for the presidency. Okay? But even less so, because the Republican Party does not need a Republican president. Now, for all those Obama apologists, I'm just, you know, deal with it. From the obsequious way that he has dealt with the banks,
yeah,
to Summers, to Geithner, you know, fawning over the banks, and all the, you know, the wars, the extrajudicial killings, the fact that Guantanamo Bay is still open. This new story that's way up at the top of my stack that I didn't get to yet about the UN uncovering systematic torture that we bought and paid for as taxpayers in Afghanistan. There's nothing, what's not to like for a Republican? So what you do is you divert everybody's attention to the presidential election and quietly go about the business of consolidating your majority in the House and taking the Senate.
Yeah,
and what happens after inauguration 2013 when there is a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a pliant, compliant president?
You know what? I agree with you. We do focus too much on presidential politics and not enough on the issues. And speaking of the issues, we got to give a big, small victory sort of for Mumia Jamal's latest win, which is basically that they've set it up so if they push any harder on him, they've taken the death sentence basically away from him. They've neutralized it in a sense because it will reopen his case. So his lawyer team has made a really good maneuver in this case. But the sad part about it is the fact that they probably won't reopen the case, and he's probably going to be in jail for the rest of his life because that's just the way it is. But you know, he doesn't get the death sentence at least.
Yeah, and okay, then the next thing we go to work on is Leonard Peltier.
Yeah.
That guy just needs to be out.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that that need to be out. Is that guy out yet that bid it on the land auction?
No.
Hmm.
No.
There's a big list, and you know, the issues that we're not paying attention to because of the theater of politics. And the way the GOP constantly makes us continue to talk about their candy of the week or whatever is really problematic. Because when you look at everything that's happening in the world right now, it eats away so much time, Bob. I mean, and when you talk to someone about politics, mainly what they'll talk about is the top tier, which is, oh, you think Obama will win? And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the quiet and nefarious attempt to take the Senate has a lot better chance because those are all state races.
Right. And then you have the, and then nobody knows about the issue of with Citizens United and the fact that we've rigged the game board again with the redistricting, the caging. You just go down the list, and nobody pays attention to that because as soon as you start talking about it, they're like, I don't know all about all that. That sounds like some crazy talk. That's crazy talk, but. Going into a Middle Eastern country and searching for weapons that you have no idea where they are, and just turning upside down tables and looking in caves and saying, "I will find them, we'll find them."
That's no, see, they moved them to Syria and the Russians come in and took them away.
Yeah,
the sneaky Russians.
Tunnel. That's what we got to do.
I know.
You know, it certainly looks like. It certainly looks like of all the issues that we have to deal with, that it is almost getting near impossible to discuss them in a practical manner because of the way of how people are programmed. And I hate to say that, but
I know.
And you can get that just from listening to just from listening into people around you at any public places you go to, and you certainly get that feeling.
Well, there's a let's see, in the Carter administration, they use the word malaise. Is there an ennui in this country now? That's better. I don't know if it's better or worse than, but it's not malaise. This is it's like what I was saying a few minutes ago about, you know, those little signposts. This country is in a bigger mess than maybe even the people who think this country is in a mess know, David. Do you see what
I see exactly what you're saying, and I think
I think about that retired fire chief or fire marshal in Foley, Alabama, who let himself die rather than say anything to anyone after the city of Foley, Alabama said, "Well, we're sorry, we're not going to pay your pension anymore." Pension
right.
Monies that he himself had paid into. The guy that was left to freeze to death in northern Michigan a few years back. And see, we treat these things as isolated incidents when they're not. They are all of them things that no country with any self-respect should ever tolerate to take place. In the chat room just a few minutes ago. Benedict Large said, "File it next to that town in Michigan where the power company is repossessing the town's streetlights."
I think the most revealing thing about all of this, Bob, is when you look at the what's going on with the protests, what's going on with all the injustices in our country and around the world, is the fact that we don't have a direct line. And we talked about this before. We don't have a direct line for communication for all the people just mulling in their home. You can't just go instantly into their brain and say, "Don't you think something's wrong with this?" I agree, too. I guess in some ways the Internet is like that, but not quite, because you have to be at the same place and you have to have on the same pulse. And it's hard to get that it's hard to get that communication started.
You're absolutely right, because you know there's no really channel knob to turn, there's no clicker for the Internet,
right?
So unless you are motivated to go and, you know, for instance, read information from outside the American for-profit media, you're pretty much going to take whatever it is that's spoon-fed to you on a daily basis. I've got my bad Morning Joe habit, for instance. And I watch that stuff just to see how stuff is, how reality is being disinformed to a pliant American public. And it's pretty stunning if you sit there and watch 3 hours of it in the morning, because by the time it's over, you're going, if people are relying on this for news, they're screwed. They're just screwed.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem. You look at you know, the way we set up morning shows, evening shows, whether it's news or entertainment. It really,
well, how the hell can you tell the difference anymore?
Yeah, that's
true. They're merged. They're hybridized.
Yeah, they're right. They're hybridized, and even the, you know, even the fact, if you look at the state of humor on TV, the fact that we have to the jokes that we tell, the shows that are on TV, the writing that is presented, these are all signs of a complete breakdown in society culturally.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. And I don't know what the answer is.
I think the answer is you have to wait it out and hope that when that window opens, that, you know, people like yourself, you'll be in that chair, and people will be receptive to listening to you, and any person who wishes to educate the broader public. But I think the problem is that I have to think people that don't realize that I don't have a time frame. I can't be like on this stand, even though this is Prayer Meeting Wednesdays, and tell you the rapture of enlightenment and education is coming, boy, it's coming. I don't know when. I don't know when someone's going to have that critical thinking moment where you're going to have that movement, instead of being like what we're in now, which is like emotional reactionary, where we shift to a critical thinking era of enlightenment, because I think that's a big problem right now, what we face. How do we evolve to that?
Well, and can you evolve in the face of anti-evolutionary forces?
Right.
All of mass media, all of for-profit media, is geared specifically toward disenlightenment, if that's a word. Don't get enlightened. Don't become active. Don't become really seriously engaged. You know, go watch somebody. Go watch Nancy Grace fall out of her dress.
You know, that's why. You know, Bob. That's why I detest these war on terror stories that spend so much time into our national psyche of discussion. When it comes to, I call it like emotional. It's emotional weight. And in a sense,
well, God, look at this alleged Iranian
right
terror plot story that broke today. I mean, that's just another "he tried to kill my daddy" story writ large. Well, they were going to attack this Saudi embassy and the Israeli embassy in the United States, and we need to bomb them for that. Oh, Jesus, please.
You know, but here's the question about it, is the fact that they put it out there. And they know this. They know that none of this is ever going to touch our radius. Where, oh my God, the Iranians are doing this to us, and we got to get prepared. They know that's never going to happen. But yet still, they have that ability to psychologically damage people into thinking it's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen.
Well, look, this Iran terror plot story plays right into the hands of the right wing, because now in a series of pageants that have been decidedly absent or decidedly devoid of any foreign policy discussion. Suddenly they've got a ready-made foreign policy yammering point, so the next time one of them comes along, the moderator can say, Governor Romney, what would you do to Iran?
Well, I'm not like that sissy Obama. I'd have bombers raining death and destruction down on Tehran yesterday. And Rick Perry can say, me too, and we can send in some Marines with nooses and we can start stringing up the mullahs.
And you know what's sad about it? 60% of the Democrats who voted for Obama, maybe a bit less, maybe 55, maybe 50, but they understand this, people, because they study deeply psychological focus groups concerning war, terror, and fear, and all of that. They understand that the half of the population, half of the Democratic base, if this administration decides to have an invasion with Iran or wherever it is they're planning on next, that they'll go along with it. And then we, Bob, you, me, everybody listening, we will be treated as the quote-unquote anti-Americans or delusional or conspiracy theorists. There's nothing more conspiracy theorist than that bullshit story that I just heard.
Yeah. No, well, as Benedict just put it in the chat room, I want to make sure I get this right. Yeah, I'm Iran, and the best thing I can think of is to hire some Mexican druggie to go blow up a few government buildings.
You know, if we could reverse and flip it, would you believe it if Iran put out this story? Would you believe it if North Korea put out this story? Would you believe it if France put out this story? So then the question is, Agent Fred, if you're listening, why should we believe it if you wouldn't believe it if it was reversed?
Like I said, they're just taking a page from our playbook. Because we do that kind of thing. We do extrajudicial murder. We do killings in foreign lands. You know, we have, and I don't know, and again, it's that question you asked a few minutes ago, David. I don't know how you make this real for the American people. Do you say, look, your daughter's getting married and you've done all this work to make her most special day most special, and on the day of the wedding, friends and family are all there, and a drone plane comes over and fires a Hellfire missile into the reception and kills 37 people who've never done anything. How would you feel about that?
Yeah, I think
the problem is that there's 20% of America that would say, well, if I was a terrorist like they was at that wedding, I'd be a deserving it. That's how I'd feel.
Yeah, I think that's where we find ourselves at, and there just remains a floating question in the air of how we can deal and process that and make the larger public understand, because there's always going to be that percentage of people who are just going to fall for all of the it's the political placebo effect. That's what it is. And they completely fall for it because, well, you know, if we're discussing the war on terror, it must be pretty serious. And then half of the Democrats go, you know what? I bet you're right. There must be something to this war on terror thing. Let's continue to discuss this. And then, you know, continue to on and on and on. And then you're at the point like you're spending half your time talking about this, more than half your time. And then you're constantly telling other people, berating the left who's a little bit suspicious and skeptical about this whole thing. And it says, and then you have the gall. You have the gall to say to people, wow, you're just being a conspiracy theorist. There's nothing more conspiracy theory than completely falling in love with a religion of this war on terror bullshit.
Well, you know, it's interesting, the Iranian response to this whole thing, David.
Yeah.
In a speech to Iran state television, the chief Ayatollah said that said that the United States is simply trying to divert from its own severe economic problems, and said the corrupted capitalist system shows no mercy to any nation, including the American people. You know, there's an element of truth to that. Thank God that I'm not, you know, hugely and widely known. I'm sure the right wing would be, you know, screaming after us. But there is truth in that. You know, American capitalism doesn't give a good old-fashioned damn about American workers, or else we wouldn't be talking about these stupid trade agreements with Korea and Panama, for God's sakes. I mean, the realities are out there. Andy wrote in just a little bit ago with some of the basics on that.
He says the free trade deal, South Korea, Colombia, and Panama will destroy us, the 99%. According to Leo Girard, United Steelworkers, the Korean Colombian trade deal and Colombian trade deals will cost us 159,000 jobs. The Financial Times quotes the Economic Policy Institute as believing the South Korea deal alone will cost us 159,000 jobs. So, you know, who
see, that's what we should be talking about. That's what a lot of these pundits should be talking about. And Bob, it so makes sense why the fact we don't talk about it. We have this nonsense that's just dropped. Oh, look, yeah, this story. Whoa, this story's really, really, really. Look.
And Jesus, you know, GE, one of the biggest outsourcers in the country that pays nothing, not a damn dime in taxes, David, has the gall to put its CEO on 60 Minutes to say, I want America to root for GE. How, David, how? Yay, GE, send my job to Brazil. Not that I got anything against the Brazilians.
And you know what's crazy? These moguls on steroids actually have the nerve to say, well, you know what? You need to stop acting irrational. Holy shit.
Yeah. You know, and then like Reverbo noted, that stupid email comes out from Rents Priebus. That says, you know, that we've got to stop the leftist assault of Barack Obama on our prosperity. What prosperity? The one that's around the corner? Jesus. You know, ain't nothing getting better anytime soon, and nobody in their right mind thinks it. If these prattling idiots from the pageant last night could wave a magic wand and make any one of their stupid policy provisions law overnight, nothing would still get better. You know, it would take years. This is one of the fundamental failings is that so many people, and the punditocracy in particular, and the for-profit media generally, don't understand that this isn't a temporary thing. This is a symptom of a disease, and the disease is that the system is wholly and entirely and quite possibly irretrievably broken. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on with that. And the only thing I would say in closing is the fact that what's really tragic about this, Bob, what's really tragic is we are actually, in a way, we are helping these business moguls. We're telling them, listen, you are getting too isolated. You're getting too paranoid about what you think the working class or what the 99% or whatever it is. But this is the reality outside. And what do we get in return? We get what is expected, the exact opposite. You're crazy. You're acting irrational. You just got to work harder. That bullshit.
Because that is part of the American mythos.
Yeah, I know.
Hard work will be rewarded. Well, no, again, because the system is perhaps irretrievably broken, hard work is not rewarded in the United States anymore.
Personal responsibility heroin. That is what everyone is addicted to in the business class now. They believe it lock, stock, and barrel. And even
well, as long as the personal responsibility is for us.
Yeah.
They don't do it.
Oh, I mean exactly, because they're ordained. I understand that concept.
Exactly, David. Good talking to you, brother.
All right, Bob. Later. Before I go. Have a great trip, and I hope you enjoy yourself while you're out there.
I'm going to try. There will be more work than enjoy, but there will be some enjoy.
All right, later.
All right, bye now. Heck, if I just get to put my feet in the Atlantic Ocean for a couple of minutes, it'll be kind of nice. This is not rocket science. Some of the questions that are being asked, and they're being asked by manifestations of discontent by all the occupiers all over the country. How many cities now? Over 1,300. The statements being made are actually questions, and the question is the system irretrievably broken. And it's hard to find a way, it's hard not to say no. No, it's hard to say no. It's hard not to say yes. Because absent a rather shocking, to some, alteration of the system, it's not going to get well. You know, some of the Clinton economic miracle was born of the fact that he was president during the internet boom, and that bubble burst. And then we had a housing bubble based on fraudulent so-called securities, and it burst. And all during this time, American jobs are hemorrhaging overseas, overseas, overseas. You're not going to bring those jobs back, contrary to the opinion of Jeffrey Immelt and a whole bunch of Republicans, by telling American corporations that they can bring their money back home basically scot-free. The money might come back, but they're not going to fund anything. It's part of what I call the mash pizza oven, the mash autoclave problem. Remember that episode? They needed a new autoclave, or they needed an autoclave so they didn't have to constantly be sending stuff off. And they went to the quartermaster, and he said, I've got two. And they said, we'll take one. He says, no, but if I give you one, I won't have two anymore. Right? Well, if that money's repatriated to the United States and they use it to create jobs, well, they won't have that money anymore. Now, will they? And if you are a Wall Street tycoon, you are used to resting your Butox on a fluffy cushion of ice cold cash. And the last thing in the world you want to do is make your Butox any less cushioned. You know, people are out there talking about this, whether it's Krugman or Robert Reich. The Reverbo sent along a blog post from him earlier today. And you find yourself hard-pressed to disagree? Because, because there is no impetus to rein in the manifest power born of greed. You know, I had a little epiphany moment earlier today. I paid the water bill. And in so doing, I was reminded by my provider that West Virginia American Water Company is the largest shareholder-owned water company in the state. And I thought, and you're bragging about that? Shareholder-owned my ass. West Virginia American Water is owned by American Water. American Water is owned by a British holding company that is in turn a wholly owned subsidiary of a massive corporation in Germany. So when I pay my 50 or 75 bucks a month for water, I'm paying a German corporation. Shareholder owned. And even if it was just little old West Virginia American Water Company out there that was owned by its shareholders, well, that means it's not owned by the public. And the public is the best guardian of the water that we need to survive. Robert Reich says, and I think it's reflective of things that we've said here on this program, that the Democratic Party will likely not control the Occupy Wall Street movement. He concludes by saying, "This is not to say that the occupiers can have no impact on the Democrats. Nothing good happens in Washington, regardless of how good our president or representatives may be, unless good people join together outside Washington to make it happen. Pressure from the left is critically important." But he finishes this way, "But the modern Democratic Party is not likely to embrace left-wing populism the way the GOP has embraced, or more accurately been forced to embrace, right-wing populism. Just follow the money," he says, "and remember history." Because by way of history, he offers up the fact that the Democratic Party, starting in the late 60s and into the 70s, ran away from its left-wing populist roots. Hey, welcome to the program.
Water bill?
Yeah, water bill.
Yeah, I pay mine to a municipality. It's actually run by a Republican. Unbelievable. But it's
a municipality. The public owns it.
And when I lived in Akron, it was run by the municipality. And, you know, we all share in the cost and upkeep and all that, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, in my case, the federal monies were put forward to extend water lines out to, for instance, where I live. And the minute it was all built, it was sold, that water system built with public monies was sold to West Virginia American Water.
Yeah, it's like when I was down in Monroe County. This is Thomas, by the way.
Right.
But you know, where the boys' cabin is, as we call it, a cabin, they have no electric there. For them to get electric now, if you don't have the rural electrification program, they would have to pay for the electric company to run lines down to them.
Sure.
So now you don't have all this infrastructure investment we used to have, because there's nobody there. Back when it went through, so you didn't need to run the lines there. So if you want to get a line extended there, you'd have to pay for it. The county has a water supply thing, but you better have money for them to dig up the roads and run the water lines, because the county support it, they can't do it. So you better have the money. So, you know, we're just not...
Capitalism in action, right, Thomas?
Yeah, it's like this. So, you know, I saw a comment on one of the blogs. It's like with this thing out in Arizona where they got rid of the beating a woman's law and made it legal. Go, it's now illegal to pay taxes, and it's now legal to beat your wife. That's a sad statement. So, anyhow, you know, it's like, you know, people want to invest in the roads, but they want to use them, and it's just nuts. It's totally nuts on my part. I just look at this, go, wait a second. We had good roads. I remember Dorothy Fulltime on Cleveland TV back years ago when we started disinvesting in things when Reagan came in. She was complaining about the potholes. Well, you lower taxes and you don't get the public funds, you cannot fill those potholes. And she was complaining, we used to have such good roads, but don't want to pay taxes. Great. Well, guess what? That's the result.
Right, because you cannot you can't have both. If you want good infrastructure, you have to pay for it, because it's never ever ever, Thomas, going to be profitable for some private industry group to do it on its own. Because to try to wring profit out of something like a rural road, hell, I mean, it can't be done. It just can't.
I can't imagine. Can't imagine what the post office pays for maintenance fee on their vehicles on these roads. I mean, they're horrendous. It's like you're driving down a road and it's not even 1.5 cars wide. You're actually pulling off the road, letting their car through, but you're driving on the left side, the right side, whatever, just dodging these sinkholes. it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's automobile slalom involuntarily.
Yeah. You know, and I see people speed down these roads, and I go, I can't imagine, you know, Jasmine, they must have a lot of money to keep...
Thomas, I live on a one-lane road. And to see people come out it, I mean, we allow timber trucks and coal trucks on this road, and they reduce the pavement to gravel almost overnight.
Yeah, well, they've been grinding them up down Southern Ohio where I is. Right? Rather than repaving them with asphalt, they're just grinding them and just turn them into gravel. Just let it lay there.
Yeah.
Let the cars smooth them out, you know, or not smooth them out, as the case may be. But anyhow, I got to tell you, I just love that history chat last night. I think you had more people in the chat room last night than you have tonight. And it was great. And I'm thinking, you know, I told you I killed my Kindle, which stinks.
Well, you didn't mean to. It was involuntary Kindle slaughter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was because I formatted the Federalist Papers up on the dang thing, put an index on the thing, linked up all the footnotes, you know, which was really good to go through that thing and start reading them, and I have a footnote in the thing and just jump down the footnote, read the footnote, go back and pick up where you left off and go down through it further, and you know, it was excellent. It's like last night, it's like you know, I'm listening to Dr. Bill talked about medicine's, he mentioned one of the last times, medicine's vices of the American political system or whatever it's called, and then link it to the Federalist number 10. It'd be kind of nice to take those two texts and kind of meld them together where you could jump between one and the other and just see what he's talking about, how they're connected. And that'd be kind of like a neat little thing for me to fire up on your Moby Pocket books and see if I can take the two tests and link them together and just follow along that way. I think it'd be a great resource.
Oh, it would be. That's really cool.
So just, you know, little things bounce in my head. You know, it's not all the current political stuff, even though I know the current political stuff, and, you know, I'm not stupid on stuff. I read Crooks and Liars religiously. And
yeah, but, you know, it's like what Shakespeare said, what's past is prologue. And if you get a handle on, via... what Dr. Bill and Professor Lilly are doing, if you get a handle on how we got here, it's a lot easier to understand here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's like, I think I wrote, yeah, I said, you know, I looked at a lecture last night and going, you know, I'm looking, gee, they're like saying we started from here, the Massachusetts Charter of Liberties, and we get all the way down to our Constitution, and basically, what is the basis of our community? And it's like they're just going through all this different stuff, you know, and just all these different other resources. We were Carl Becker or John Fisk or what have you, and then you start listening to the subtitles of the Massachusetts and you start Liberties of Children. You're kidding me? Hell, my dad told me where to go.
You knew how many liberties you had because you could count them on no hands.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, Dad said don't do this. Kenny, you want to go do this? So, yeah, okay, we knew what the punishment was, but, you know, we chose it. You know, it's like, yeah, we're going to get in our bikes. We're going out to Turkey Foot Lake Park, and we're just going to, because after that brick wall, we'll stack it tomorrow. So, you know what the rules were and the boundaries were, and, you knew what the punishments were, so sometimes you choose the honor boundary, or you chose the punishment. So, yeah, it went with territory, and we knew when we picked it.
Exactly.
So.
Well, there will be more of these chats. I think we've got two of them scheduled in November, one scheduled in December. We've got one more scheduled this month on the 25th. And then once the winter semester starts, we will be going. We're going to try to have two a month up until May, and then of course we'll have the whole summer academy there, late June and early July.
Yeah, just like last summer, and that was good. I enjoyed that.
Well, I'm glad you did, and it's really important, Thomas, that you say so, because folks need to know that this resource is available to them. It is. To me, it is an honor to be able to be part of bringing them, and primarily, it is just so doggone important to make this stuff available, because, as I've said before, the right wing does not hesitate to just make crap up.
I know. It's like, I think it wasn't Frederick Carlson, but it was, I can't think of the other guy from, what's that institute they run that, you know, he posts about how the, whatever that right, one of those right wing Christian, history spinner groups are just linking them, asking everybody to pray to God to get rid of them, and, you know, and it's like, you know, it's interesting, but you know, when they take and challenge the people on their history facts and that, write that up and just read up on it and be aware of what's going on out there and try to get your knowledge up so you can correct the myths out there. You know, I think you're doing a service if you're able to do that.
Well, I certainly do appreciate it, Thomas. I really, really do.
I appreciate what you've done, and like I said, last night, base of the community, you know, you started out with the Puritans, and you got up to Jefferson's, and little ending with George Mason and the Virginia Declaration of Independence. And
go ahead.
I do want to point out one thing about the Amish. That one group that moved over from the central Ohio into the eastern part there, basically they're coming from two cultural experiences. Basically, my brother was friends with them in Ashland County and Richmond County, the Amish there, and they were more connected to the actual society that they lived amongst because they were in the minority there. First you get down to Holmes County and what have you, they are more the central fabric. They're large in tendency, and so they've been able to hold on to their past culture. So I think it was a culture conflict there, and I don't know what went on. I knew there was stuff out in the media, but I didn't need to go read it. I just kind of felt okay.
Well, it's just, to me, it's just another example of wacky religion at work.
Yeah, it is, and I understand that, but it was also a cultural conflict. I just wanted to mention that.
And thank you for it. I guess, you know, I couldn't resist being a little lighthearted about it, when Amish attack. And
we can get David. He can, Democrats want to. They make fun of Cassaway, and he was from Ohio. See how far that gets.
Yeah. That's true. You know, that Taft was our last obese president, right?
I don't know if he was. You know, I'm not up there on history. That's why I got to stay with the prison series.
Well, I was going to point out to you that after the mics and everything went off, what you had said about community was striking me as well. And, the topic last night, a good bit of time was spent on the Massachusetts Declaration of 1641. And we tend to view them through a political lens, if you will. But those weren't necessarily political documents. And I say that because they were means of establishing how the community would function. And not just function, but survive. And sure. to that end, you know, the thing that I said to Dr. Bill is that, you know, with all these for-profit pundits on the TV, what do the Occupy Wall Street protesters really want? I don't understand. Well, right now, what they want to do is to feed themselves and keep themselves clothed and have shelter from inclement weather and live in peace. And so any culture that would set itself up anew has to address itself evolutionarily, has to address itself to those basic hierarchy of needs sorts of things before they can start doing the high-blown, highfalutin, head-scratching political stuff.
Yeah, I forget when Maslow wrote that hierarchy, but it's been quite a while ago.
Well, and it's still applicable.
Sure it is, because, you know, it's like, I've been running around, we've been running around, and trying to take care of our financial needs here. I have a little bit of major financial loss here as far as income's going, and just figure out how we're going to fill that gaps. And, And part of filling in gas is not just Bert and I. I ain't worried about us eating. I'm just being able to make sure we have a couple bucks here and there where we can fill the gas to our, you know, our kids and that. They're not up on this game with this economy. It's been ginned against them for quite a long time, and we've been filling some pretty big chuck holes because nobody wants to pay for paving the roads, and so we've been stepping up and providing that pavement.
Well, exactly. And by the way, let me just thank you for your continuing help here, because when I was talking about paying that water bill, I couldn't have done it without help.
I have to. It's like I pay for Sam Cedar. I try to pay some what dues I can with you, and even Sam admits he has thousands of listeners and people won't subscribe. I mean, they'll grab his free podcast, but they won't pony up even $10 to even buy a month's worth. And that is just, you call yourself progressive and you want the media. Come on, we don't all chip in. We don't practice what we preach. What's the point?
Well, and absent that, a lot of it goes away too. And I don't think any of us want that. But I don't know of any of the shows with which I'm fairly familiar that aren't operating on a shoestring.
Well, you look at Mike. Last night's broadcast, he said he has no sponsors for any shows this month. Now I don't have the money to send him $125 for sponsoring an hour. But I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to it.
It's tough. This is and it's particularly frustrating, Thomas, because, and I've said this a million times over, the right wing doesn't have these problems, because there's always a Koch brothers or a Singer or that guy in North Carolina,
whoever.
Yeah, and there's this bubbling font of money. That if you want to say crazy, hateful stuff, well, they got a check for you.
Sure.
But
sure, maybe that's our model. Maybe I just start repeating them and start squirreling away, and then, okay, then bring out the cannons. But by the time we squirrel enough away, we're totally screwed. So, deceit never works for you.
Right.
It can't work for you.
Exactly. Well, it is awfully good to hear from you, and we will talk again when I get back.
I'm glad you're doing what you're doing for a Cold River Mountain Watch.
Well, they do a lot for us. Without listener contributions and without Cold River Mountain Watch, this program would not be here. It is that combination.
I got stuck with a freight train the other day with the gates down. Just watched probably over 100 cars of coal just move by me.
Yeah.
Kind of made me steam, but then again, I'm in Akron, Ohio, and probably that's where Coca-Cola, Pfizer, their electric from. Whatever plant will sell them to them cheapest, which is probably a coal power plant. So, there's that.
Exactly. Yeah, And, every time I see a coal train here in West Virginia, I used to look at the kids and go, well, there goes your heritage. And what are you getting for it?
There goes your mountain. Remember those pretty trees you used to have? Well, they ain't there.
Right. Hey, look, kids. Look, there went your gallbladders.
Yeah. I hope your daughter's doing well.
She's getting better. She is.
Hopefully she adjusts to the diet.
She seems to be, and she's coming back into her own. She was sick for a long time, though, and she's feeling much better. Thank you very much, Thomas.
Yeah, I remember that. She's the second daughter, right?
Yeah. She's the second one. There's the oldest, then her, then Ferg, and then the youngest.
Oh, whoa. Well,
yeah, there's four. One of them's out on her own, but there's three more at home.
Huh. Yeah. Well, we at least have we actually have one back home, just money-wise and all that. Talking about back home, he just arrived. Anyway, it's time to go. Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care, Thomas. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thomas calling from Ohio, and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's Mark.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, and what Thomas was referring to, not to speak for him, but you do all adults a favor by being as mature as you are, and it shows how strong your family was and your father and your mother, apparently. And I thank you. You're a leader amongst families, and I'm not trying to overinflate a reality, but it's like a bunch of adults talking to each other, not a barbershop where we drop our 9mm and shoot each other, but you know, it's a very mature, but it's actually, I can tell that listening to you, and many times I think you want to start laughing at the a lot of idiot things that are going on. I just wanted to make a comment about the privatization of water and the connection to the Enron Corporation and what they did in not only in India but in England and Argentina and and here in North Florida. But they go by the name of Azurix and the privatization of the water and the connection between Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and the Conservative Party. And once they bought in to the system with that privatization, what types of mansions leaders of the Conservative Party in England were given. Also, would like to make an observation. It's funny. The more you look at the connections between the American corporations with the Germans in World War II, you can look at there's currently a Dutch steel company working here in the United States. They're based, ironically, out of Texas. Well, interesting. That might be something for someone to check into, but they're called Mammoth, which I guess is a Dutch word for mammoth, and their public figure is it's the figure of a woolly mammoth, actually, mammoth, and they do large steel projects, and the job that I'm on here at the nuclear power plant is working with them, but I did some poking around on a break on the internet, and you see that Mammoth is tied into to Tyson Steel, and then Tyson is, of course, Fritz Tyson from Holland, who, you know, it's funny, the Germans, when they started World War II, went into Poland, and the reason they go there is for the ore and the iron and to build a war machine. But if you read Fritz Tyson's book, which I have not, he claims that he provided 50% of what, you know, Hitler needed to get the war going and his war machine, and the United States provided the other half, you know, much like Noriega and Saddam Hussein. But ironically, there was a guy who ran for Congress here in Florida, a Jewish American, who brought it to my attention upon inquiring that the company and corporation that built the World War II Memorial in the glorious Washington, D.C., was built by a company called A.J. Jones, which is actually a Krupp, which merged with Tyson, which has an operation in Louisville, Kentucky. But Tyson Krupp, K-R-U-P, like the
well, you know, Mark, I was about to mention that very company because while I was down at Berea, I got on an elevator on campus there. And, you know, it used to be ubiquitous that you would get on an elevator in the United States and you'd see that word down there on the floor plate, Otis. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't see that anymore. I got in the elevator and it said Tyson Krupp. And I stopped for a minute and went, oh, shit, really? Tyson Krupp? I mean, the guys who made the guns and Fritz Tyson, Hitler's angel, and we Otis isn't the source of elevators anymore. It's all Tyson Krupp, really?
Yeah, it's kind of like Citizens United and the eminent domain laws. And I'm not a corporation. I'm a citizen now. And that you would think that would be the Keystone XL project on the behalf of the Koch brothers, which are tied into the Bush family, as well as Fritz Tyson's connection to the Prescott Bush, the basically the bag man for the Rich Walkers. Connecticut Yankees and I got on an elevator about 8 or 9 years ago. I refused to use the elevator, being an old hard-headed Marine, which with much respect for the West Virginia work ethic of people working in the mines, and just the respect for work. It's just my way, but I never use an elevator if I don't have to, and I got on one at the nuclear power plant in St. Lucie, and I looked at the sill plate. I looked over my head, and I saw ThyssenKrupp, and I we didn't stop doing business. And you know, and if you look at the tattoos on the Jewish folks that survived, the tattoos came from AT&T and the and fan to the orange drink. Thanks to Michael Moore. I guess I was listening to Michael Moore recently, Bob, and his father was taking a ridge with the Marines at, I think, Iwo Jima, 25 Marines in a reinforced squad, and 24 of them were hit by a U.S. Navy or U.S. Marine Corsair, and his father was the only Marine not hit, and I think 11 Marines wounded and 13 killed. And Michael Moore's grandfather, taking a step further back, was in the 37th sit-down strike at the, I guess, the Ford plant, General Motors plant, where the Pinkertons go in. So, but he's a hippie liberal communist. But those are some pretty neat values. I thank God I wasn't at Iwo Jima or at the strike. But any case, you know, we're in a country where it's in our face in every regard. And the less courage that we have, the more ostentatious they become. And I accept that challenge. And this weekend, over 1,000 cities will be pushing back. And it's very invigorating for a peaceful citizen to engage other peaceful citizens to push back against what they know is wrong, even though they can't spell it out. None of us can. But it does make you stronger for the next event. And I don't want to live that way. I grew up in the Kennedy 60s and 70s, the tail end of where families that had an honest living didn't have to do this. I don't like talking the way I have to. I would prefer studying something or just moving on in a different way. But when I make my comments here in Central Florida, if I were to call a radio station, which I have, I'm no longer a Kennedy Democrat. I'm a Marxist. I've never read Karl Marx, but Karl Marx probably makes a lot of sense. I have read a couple magazine articles describing Marx, but I don't need to study Marx.
Well, you know, it's 19th century language in translation. It can be a little bit of a chore.
Yeah, it's like reading the Bible. I've never read a Bible. It just gives me a headache. too much stuff there.
Well, you know, you mentioned I know your heritage with the Marines and what you just talked about a couple of minutes ago. I actually thought of you a couple of days ago when I was, or yesterday, when I was watching the aftermath of what went on at Occupy Boston, and the police assault on those American veterans who were trying to protect the occupiers.
I didn't catch that. Is that right, Bob?
Yeah. It was shameful. It was a shameful display. They waited until the dark and still of the night, and then the Boston PD attacked. And some veterans, Veterans for Peace, mm-hmm. tried to protect, and they had planted an American flag. And for all that the right wing talks about how, you know, they're anti-American liberals, you know what they talk like.
Sure, yeah.
I still get pretty red-assed about the flag. Because there's too much that's gone into it, you know, just from my family alone, let alone yours or any, you know, everyone else's combined.
Your family and my family, Bob, together.
And as a consequence, when I read the reporting that the Boston PD had run over and trampled that flag in the dirt, I'm grateful that I wasn't there. Because I can't stand that. You know, we've got these right wingers who talk about, you know, they got to have a flag burning amendment now. And we got to, you know, we have to sing God Bless America at the ballpark now instead of take me out to the ballpark. You know, I've heard it observed that American sport is the only place where you have to have a little hypocritical orgy of patriotic fervor before you could get the game started. Now, I watched that one rugby match between the United States and Ireland. Well, the Irish club sang its club anthem, not the Irish anthem, its club anthem. But by God, it was September 11th, 2011, and there in New Zealand they played the United States national anthem. And all of that stuff makes me a little bit crazy, because there's a disconnect. There's no connection between sport and it. No. But I haven't heard a single right-winger, Mark, not one single right-winger, make so much as a passing comment about an American flag trampled in the dirt in Boston by the Boston Police Department. Not a word.
Yeah, you won't hear, and it's the same lack of observation or comment about the wars in Iraq, where Afghanistan have caused the country over $3 trillion.
And I'm absolutely I haven't spent any time on it, and shame on me for not. But I saw this story yesterday, and I'm still not okay. You know, UN finds systematic torture in Afghanistan. Suspects are hung by their hands, beaten with cables, and in some cases their genitals are twisted until they lose consciousness in detention facilities run by the Afghan Intelligence Service and the Afghan National Police, both of whom are entirely funded by you and me, Mark, and all of us.
That's correct, yeah. Actually, that cash is matriculating itself right back into the Taliban. It's and of course, if you look at the very beginning of the Afghanistan nightmare, they have footage in one of the documentaries that a decorated U.S. Marine fellow protester, of which he belongs to the Veterans for Peace, and I actually met in a physical confrontation where some right wingers were confronting him, and I just pulled into Gainesville. I'm a pretty good sized guy, Bob, and I had to threaten them to go away, and one claimed to be a Marine. I said, if you were a Marine, you wouldn't be acting like you were to him. And he had his combat ribbons from the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps is very conservative on their ribbons, traditionally have been. But in the documentary, it shows, and you may have seen this, that the Americans were right there as they locked a lot of folks up into the Connex boxes as they died, probably by the hundreds. But they also showed some footage, Bob, of a group of real tough Army Delta operators, which were dispatched out of Joint Special Operations Command, which originates itself out of Tampa. Big macho group there.
Well, and that's that was one of the questions that occurred to me. How can this happen? And Special Ops Command in Tampa not know that it's happening? Because after all, we trained them, we accompany them.
Right.
How does the blood not wind up on our hands? I mean, Jesus. Use of interrogation methods including suspension, beatings, electric shock, stress positions, threatened sexual assault. You know, this is all in the UN report. The research covered 47 facility sites in 22 provinces. Okay. In one story, one detainee said he was brought in Kandahar, and the interrogator said, "Do you know the name of this office?" And when he said he did, the guy said, "Well, you should confess what you have done in the past as Taliban. Even stones confess here." And he was beaten over several days for hours at a time with electric cable, and then he signed a confession.
Well, you know, come on, Bob. We're the world's largest superpower. We show a lot of courage when we treat people this way. This shows you how strong a country is when you they just had I think he's a Iraq veteran Marine in Tampa, and there's probably many cases like this across the country. I'm not a big fan of local news, but in any case, he shot a police woman three or four times through a door, and the local people on the news in the morning were making fun of him. Understandably, I thought the humor was funny myself, having been a Marine that he wasn't a very good shot, but they were making fun of him to keep their sanity because he's having some kind of domestic situation, and some judge here locally in the Tampa area, Bob, had put his bond very low, like at $6,500, which in any case, they've readjusted that, but he walked because he was the big war hero with all these multiple tours. But I want to just make a comment about the situation in Afghanistan, this this big Delta Force operation, and they show some guy, he's the big macho senior guy, he's probably all of 26 years old with his juvenile beard, hands it to the 19-year-old with his, and he gets to call in an airstrike of a 5,000-pound bomb, and maybe it's the Marines, it just might be my natural personality, but I thought it was hilarious because bomb landed right on their position and blew his particular hand off. I mean, he's lucky they didn't slice all themselves in half. But I just thought, you know, that John Wayne American mentality, these four Americans that may be catching our show or eavesdropping on it, it's just really a sad comment to know that Richard Nixon supports, the government in Chile as the poor citizens there and school teachers. We're really heading in that direction. And I'm not giving up. And I know I'm 53, but I'm going to be out there with what's left of my physicality, and I'm going to be I'm a nonviolent person, Bob, just like yourself. I really am. I have the capability to do damage, but I choose a very peaceful. I'm a former policeman. I have a lot of self-discipline. I could have shot people as a cop in Miami. Had no desire to. I have no malice intent. I have no desire. Never have had a desire to hurt a soul. I really have not. That spawns off of my own personal life where I wanted to protect, those weaker amongst us, as you might be able to imagine. But the point is, that discipline wasn't a short-term thing. That is in my biological nature, and I still have this. This is me, and I feel like what I'm associated with the AFL-CIO, where we stand for the workers of the world and the United States, that's a religious thing. That it is, if we, you know, it's funny, the right wing talks about the stupid flag, and they talk about all kinds of nonsense, but they're just so one-dimensional. You know, you care about your neighbor, make sure he's got Social Security, or make sure she does. And if you care about your neighbor, make sure they have the Medicare. That is Jesus. And I wouldn't know. I swear to God, I've never read a Bible. I don't really need to. I know right and wrong, and I know you do too, and I know many of your listeners they're all good Americans. And I'm a physical creature, though. And, but, you know, thank goodness that the Tea Party are elderly and Caucasian, and they're dying. And they're all being manipulated by FreedomWorks, which is owned by the Koch brothers, which are worth $45.3 billion, the two richest brothers that own Georgia-Pacific. And the Keystone, am I pronouncing it correctly, the Keystone Oil Project, which is coming out of Alberta to the refineries in Texas.
Right.
And won't drive down the oil prices because it's a deregulated commodity. Bob will hang up because I just love listening to you talk.
Well, bless your heart, Mark. Thank you very much.
You're a good American. You really are. You're worth defending.
Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Take care, Mark. Mark calling from Florida. And that pretty much brings us to the end of the program. Just another gentle reminder, I'll be gone tomorrow and Friday. Yay, reruns! Oh, well, sorry. I'll be gone tomorrow and Friday. By the way, for those who want the audio, I sent the upload link to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org to put up last night's Prism lecture, and you can check it out. It's 2 hours long if you want to. I think you'll be fascinated. And again, we will have another one of those on the 25th of October. And I'll be back on Monday. Thank you very kindly for the one contribution that came in this evening. It was badly needed. We need much more of the same because by the time I get back, we will be a couple of days into the second half of October. And just to give you an idea of where we are, you know, by the halfway mark of the month, we need to raise about $1,250. I'm not kidding when I say that we aren't even halfway to that halfway point. Thank you to all of you who have contributed so that we can attempt to continue to stay afloat. But we are lagging sorely behind. And please understand when I say that I understand, and all of us at the Horn do understand, that when you contribute, it is a sacrifice. And especially in times such as what we have here, a great sacrifice. Rick Smith is coming up next. If you've never heard Rick, let me take just a moment and encourage you to listen to him. Even if you can't listen live, and I understand many of you can't, check him out. Check out his archive, his podcasts. They're available at whiterosesociety.org as well. Yeah, I think you'll find him among the very best. And I don't say that because he works with the Horn and with us, but simply because he is. He's incredibly smart. He understands the value of work. He understands the importance of working people being able to stand together and speak with one voice. He is a good progressive in the best sense of the word. So by all means, do check him out, even if you can't listen live. If you can listen live, please do so. Sincerely, thanks again to all of you who helped keep this afloat. It has been... do you realize that something... Well, I'll just say this. When I come back on Monday, we will be a week from Monday, we will be 6 years old here. A total of 8, but 6 years as the Horn, internet only. And every one of those 6 years has been because of your dedication. Kind of hard to imagine, isn't it? But yeah, we're a little more than a week away from being from our sixth birthday. I guess it's time to go to first grade for us, huh? Kindergarten's over. So thank you to all of you who do keep all of this going. I can never overpraise or overthink or overestimate the value of your willingness to make sure that there is something in the way of independent and unbeholden media such as we are that doesn't have to rely on corporate America and be muzzled and muted by corporate America in order to have a simple conversation. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Good to hear from Reverbo, our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy, periodically updated. Thanks to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox. Yeah, you can never say enough about what John Fox makes happen around here. And thanks, of course, to Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. You know, we got started here in October of 2005. Ben Birch started White Rose Society in 2002. Next year will be his 10th anniversary with the White Rose. And he has never sent a bill. And he literally saved progressive radio by archiving at whiterosesociety.org. Our thanks also always go out to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can go there and learn about the Coal River Wind Project. You can learn about all the other things that Coal River Mountain Watch does. And they do important things. Starting in the winter semester of next school year, children at Marsh Fork Elementary School will no longer be going to school with 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste hanging over their heads and a coal prep plant sitting next to them. That is because of the tireless efforts of Ed Wiley and Debbie Gerald, of Coal River Mountain Watch, of Judy Bonds, who didn't live to see it completed, but knew, but lived to see the announcement come that those children were going to be protected. It